Hey, this is Craig Hewitt, founder of the podcast hosting and analytics platform Castos. My background is in enterprise sales and now helping companies and content creators get their message out to larger audiences. And if you want to learn how to transform your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, significantly increase your revenue, and create scalable sales systems, you should be listening to the Authentic Persuasion Show with my good friend, Jason Cutter.
Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader. What's going on, everybody? On today's episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show, I have with me a special guest. His name is Craig Hewitt. Craig is the founder of Castos, a podcasting host and analytical platform, and actually the one that I use. We got in contact because he reached out to me and sent out emails looking for feedback and ideas and also sharing things. And I thought, hey, this would be a great conversation to have, especially since I do my hosting of my podcast through them. He has a background in enterprise medical sales prior to starting Castos and have been podcasting for just over 5 years in that area. We're going to talk about sales, business, leadership, and of course, podcasting. Craig, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Jason. Glad to be here.
I think this is fun because on the surface, and you just reminded me about this again right before we hit record, is that on the surface, I just think of you, I think of Craig as the podcasting guy, right? Like I'm just, okay, this is Craig. He's in charge of the podcast host that I use. And I think it's amazing. But you have this long sales background. And as any business owner is, you're also a salesperson. Everything in life is sales. You're either selling to customers or you're selling your employees on the vision and what you're doing. So it's always a good conversation. Now, the question I have and where I kind of want to start, what I'm curious about is how does somebody go from enterprise level medical sales to starting a podcast hosting service?
Yeah, I think the short answer is it's kind of like a existential crisis or like a not my midlife crisis, maybe a little early. I guess I was about 35. But yeah, I was in enterprise kind of level medical sales. And yeah, I mean, frankly, doing great, making a really great living, but traveling all the time, not seeing my two young kids or my wife, and just said, like, this is not the life I want to live. And got into podcasting really because I was a fan of podcasting and loved a lot of these kind of influencers that we all probably listen to, and said, like, I'm just going to start a podcast talking about business and all this kind of stuff. From there, really quickly saw, like, wow, this is a pain. Like, this is really hard. This part is really easy, right? You and I talking, this is the best part for sure. But then you got to go to post-production and you got to show notes and you got to get images and you got to do marketing assets and all this kind of stuff. And so I started a business called Podcast Motor, which did kind of like done for you post-production. So we did audio, we do show notes, we do marketing assets, and we published to your website for you. That was kind of like my first foray into online business as an entrepreneur. And it allowed me to like quit my job. My family and I moved to France, as we were talking about before we started recording. And kind of like, to an extent, like kind of living the dream. And then the opportunity came up to purchase a WordPress plugin called Seriously Simple Podcasting, which at the time was like entirely free. Anybody can use a lot of plugins in the WordPress.org repository. We purchased the plugin and then built the Castos platform kind of on top of that. So probably like you use Castos, a lot of folks use it with their WordPress site and it makes the whole publishing experience really, really slick, like you publish the rest of your content. So that's the medium version of kind of how I got into it, I guess.
And one more note on the past podcasting side, because people ask me all the time why I chose Castos. And not a plug. It's not a paid product. Advertisement in no way compensated for this. However, one of the reasons why I selected it was that WordPress plugin where I can put it in there, schedule it, set it all up, and then it's just like a blog post that you would set up in the future. And it's that easy. And I am not a technical person. Podcasting has pushed me technically outside of my normal comfort zone, which is just
well, a lot of people, typing. I mean, it's a big barrier. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's one of the reasons. That's why I love it. I always recommend it to people because it just has that capability and it just works so easy. So one of the segues into what we're going to talk about sales wise, which I'm super excited about, but I think it's important to kind of bridge this gap between podcasting and sales is one of the most fascinating things that has occurred recently in the world of podcasting. And I don't know how long this has been. Maybe it's a year, maybe it's 2 years, is the advent and creation of the private podcast. So there's what podcasting is, and most people know. You go to iTunes, you go wherever you go to podcasts, and there's the show, and you can download it, and anyone can download it. No barriers, no restrictions, no paywall, no sign-in, nothing, absolutely nothing. And then there's services like you have and others where it's a private link where you can actually set up a membership only, paid or unpaid, way to listen to podcasts as a private one. And I almost did that in season 4, and I might do that moving forward for like additional bonus content. But one of the things that's fascinating is you told me before is that companies are using that to have internal organizational podcasts, specifically many of them using them for their sales team. So talk about that and how that works, the value, the benefit, because I think I wouldn't say revolutionary, but that's a different way to disseminate information to a sales team.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's revolutionary, especially like when I put on my old sales hat. I think when I first got into sales, like, what do? You find like the A player, the guy that wins or the person that wins President's Cup every year, right? And you call them and you talk to them and you figure out what they're doing so that you can basically do the same thing. And that's hard. That takes knowing who that person is, getting kind of on their radar, finding time to chat with them, maybe go visit and kind of ride along with them or something. And that's just a lot of work, right? And you think about, what if the company and like the sales leadership could have that person or a person in another kind of like micro niche of your sales organization on an internal company podcast to share the best practices of the things that the star performers are doing to everyone on the sales team, basically anytime. And I think about like the hours I spent chatting with these kind of star performers in my field and trying to learn from them so that I could kind of up my game. And I think like, wow, we had 300 salespeople in the company I worked for. What if all 300 of them did that, right? Like how much better would your sales organization perform if you're able to disseminate information that openly and freely with everybody? And yeah, I mean, I think revolutionary is not an overstatement. If you think about people doing this really well and sharing that kind of tribal knowledge and best practices of the best performers, or like have the marketing group come in and talk to the sales team, or have the product people come in and talk to the sales team about, hey, this is how you talk about this product. These are the technical features that you need to talk about. It's massive. I should mention that we see kind of like two flavors of private podcasting. And you nailed like the definition, and really is it's like this podcast that we're on is for everybody. A private podcast is for specific individual people. So it's not even just like, hey, this is like my private podcast and a bunch of people can listen. It's, hey, I'm inviting you via your email address. You have a unique feed that you subscribe in your favorite podcasting app. If you leave the organization, or if you leave my membership site, or if you leave my online course, I can revoke your access and you get no more content. So it really is like highly specific way to deliver this content, whether it's inside an organization. For sales teams, the really big one. Other one is like HR teams and like C-suite messaging, wanting to disseminate that to teams. But the other one is like this kind of maker community online of people doing courses and membership sites. And it's a massive and I think growing part of the online content and commerce market. So I think it's just not to be passed over because it's really huge.
And it's so interesting because maybe 2-3 months ago, I spoke with someone who has a podcast and I had kind of started the conversation because I was hoping he would invite me on as a guest, right? And be like, hey, let me come on. I've got a book. I think I have some interesting stuff to share. And he basically shut that down really quick when we were doing this Zoom call because he's like, I have a podcast, but it's internal and it's only for my clients. So he was a consultant and coach. And so basically he did a podcast regularly that was a private link.
Awesome.
That was just essentially for his clients and messages to his clients because they were all in similar industries. And so he could share kind of an email newsletter blast, but in audio private podcast form. And so I mentioned that because people listening might take inspiration from that and think, okay, how can I use this internally, right? Especially yep. I have a lot of people that are solopreneurs, they're coaches, they're consultants, and they have a bunch of clients. And how could they do something that's different, like a private podcast for their coaching clients? And I love what you said about disseminating what the top reps are doing, because that's always the challenge. The top reps is in a silo, even if it's in a call center. They're in their desk, in their corner, away from everyone. And there's a small bubble of people who can learn from them. And then this allows you to spread it.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think that the leadership level, if I think back about like not my boss even, but like their area director or like vice president of sales are the people that really want to drive this. And that's what we're finding working with really big kind of like Fortune 50 companies with this is like, this is getting driven by like the VP level because they get it. To some degree, my reps are underperforming their potential. Not to say they're doing bad, but like, wow, what if we did this? What if we could share this information really easily and in a manner that like salespeople like to consume, right? Because we're on the go, we're traveling, hopefully at some point, we're visiting clients, we're in the car, all this kind of stuff. We want to listen to stuff when we want in a really portable manner, and podcasting fits the bill really well there.
Yeah, and that's where it plays that middle area because as you're talking about it in this internal thing, I'm thinking, well, most people want video and they want to watch something. Or what if they want to just emails because they don't want to listen or watch? But you're right. I mean, there's that time. Right now, it's obviously different with COVID and people not traveling, not commuting, not doing what they would normally do and having that time where they pretty much could only listen. They can't read, they can't watch, but they can definitely listen. And so that's semi-missing. But you're right. I mean, I think that fills in that and you just give that dose.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think especially now, like we're over Zoom, we're over email because all we do is sit and stare at our computer all day. So like just to mix it up, even if it's not the most optimal way to deliver the message, it's just different. Yeah. And I think people are receptive to that.
And so what are you seeing organizations? Obviously, it's disseminating information, but do you have much insight into best practices, how it's being used, what kind of messages are being shared? Any tips for somebody listening as a business leader or sales leader, and they're like, we want to have that. What should I do?
Yeah, so I think that I hate to give like an accountant's answer, but it can be a couple of different things, right? It can be like highlighting star players from your sales team and them sharing the best practices that they're having. Because in a lot of situations, and thinking back to my own thing, like you have your territory and they have their territory. You have your kind of space that you work in. So sharing your best practice is not going to hurt your ability to perform, like if you share that with the rest of the team. That is definitely one of them. The other one I mentioned before, or I kind of touched on, is like this cross-pollination of knowledge between divisions. So you bring on marketing, you bring on product, you bring on engineering, you bring on like a C-suite to share these messages. That's another big one that we're seeing. And I think the other one is just like, I hate to say like regular updates, but like regular updates in a way that people like to consume this information. Because I think like as a salesperson, I remember I was always looking for like the latest thing, the latest tip, the latest bit of information to kind of take that edge over my competition. And I think that just sending out even like a daily brief from like a sales leadership or a product leadership team to the sales team is super effective in keeping them like leveled up as much as possible. So those are like the few that come to mind like offhand. I know this is like a sales podcast, but I think it's really worth mentioning is like I touched on HR before just because that is definitely the second biggest bucket that we see this in. So things like diversity and inclusion, HR, like onboarding a new employee. I think about like, hey, what if you just got a podcast with 20 episodes? You need to listen to these in the next week. That's a really cool way to onboard someone into like culture and how we work and things like that. So I think that like folks out there that are listening that might be like that solopreneur or kind of wear several hats in an organization, like the HR and the culture perspective, especially as a lot of folks are going remote, is a really cool way to share maybe some of like that softer information with teams in a really different way that people, again, like are really receptive to.
And I love the idea of creating essentially, let's say, just an internal podcast show from HR, which is onboarding on through everything. It's like, here, listen to these episodes, right? Instead of sit down and watch these training videos or let's have meetings and talk about the same thing I tell every person, like listen to these and then we'll do the training or the onboarding. Mm-hmm. And totally. That way it's like double layers, right? You're listening to it and then you're experiencing it. And I think that's huge. I think that's great. And you're right. I mean, yes, this is a mostly sales related podcast and these kind of things, HR, marketing, could be a product team, it could be customer service, it could be any group in the organization. And I love how you said too, cross-pollinating from others, right? And having other departments sharing, especially for the sales teams, which is what's marketing doing? What's customer service experiencing? What's retention dealing with? What's the CEO planning? Like Even those little news updates and the things that you would send in the email blast or in a memo, do it in a podcast maybe also. And so people can listen to it if they prefer to listen. Maybe it sinks in a little more. People can just take those bite size. Again, I think it's awesome because if you think about okay, someone could download this podcast and they're getting ready for work or they're starting their day and they're listening to that and they're just up to date and then they're just hitting the ground running. I used to do that at the last company I was at. I was doing daily videos. So I would do a daily video, 5-6 minutes, and send it out to the whole team of what I was seeing, issues I was seeing, things they could work on, things to focus on, new things coming up, things to help them, sales tips, reminders, what marketing was doing. And it was a great way to broadcast that. But that required everyone to watch a video and to be present for that, different than audio.
Yep, absolutely. You touched on like sending an email too. Just very generally, we think of private podcasting as being something that is an extension of other things you're already doing. So a lot of people use Casto's private podcasting via our Zapier integration to kind of hook into their email provider or their membership site, or they write some custom code and hook into it that way via our API, but it is not typically something that like stands alone by itself. It is, here's the email and here's the podcast that goes along with that, or here's the video and here is the video in just audio form. And I think it's great. Just like it takes such little extra work, like we're doing with this, like we're live streaming this and then you're going to make it into a podcast episode and you're going to make it into a blog post and you might transcribe it, right? And so it like takes a small amount of effort to repurpose that into a bunch of different ways. Because the fact is like, people consume content in different ways and they're different kinds of learners. And doing this, you're getting like a little something for everyone, like a very small additional amount of work. So that's what we love. Yeah.
And I think that's important too. And somebody listening might think, why are these guys talking about podcasting so much? But I think you hit it right there on the head too, which is everybody on your team and your customers, everybody learns differently, right? Some people love to read. Some people love to listen. Some people love to watch stuff. I remember learning that lesson years ago with a boss that I had. He didn't like reading. He liked listening, right? So he would listen to audiobooks, not read books. He liked having conversations and meetings and doing voice memos and listening to voicemails more than writing stuff out. And so I learned, hey, I'm not going to write him a 5-page report because he literally didn't look at it. Like that's pointless. Yeah. It would be better if I made him an audio or we just had a meeting about it. And then everybody on your team's different. Some people watch videos. I mean, I've even told people about my voice coaching over Voxer program that I have. And some people are like, well, I don't like that because I like video. It's like, okay, well, so that's a different thing. But it's interesting how people like what they like and learn. And so you mix this in with everything. Now, with the perspective that you have, obviously you're seeing the sales teams. In this era right now, whether they're clients of yours or just in general, because you're experiencing so many different things, what are companies doing well these days that you feel is either helping them right now or setting them up for success or sales related?
Yeah, for sure. I think the obvious one here, like today with COVID still ongoing, is like they're going to their customers in a lot of different ways. That means a lot of different things. Meeting their customer in the modality that they're able to. Meeting the customer's needs in terms of like price and terms and like the duration of an engagement that they're on. I think that's something just generally like that we're doing. We're offering like a lot of flexibility in the way that you can work with us. And a lot of companies really enjoy that. But it's going both ways. Some people say like, hey, we want a 3-year deal, kind of high end thing, or we just want to come in and like start at the $20 a month thing and grow from there. So I think that like flexibility these days is key because there's a whole bunch of uncertainty out there. And so I think as you're able to help companies mitigate that or minimize it from their perspective, that's really huge. That might be like the biggest thing. And I think the other thing is like remote work, like we're all remote right now. You said you're traveling in the next couple of weeks, but that's just starting again. And I think that something that's interesting is like there will be this hang-on effect of remote work that a lot of us in our companies and that our customers expect or would be okay with, is that like they would be okay with having more conversations like this over Zoom or StreamYard or podcasting or whatever, as opposed to always getting on a plane and going to see a customer. And so I think that's just something that like we're all waiting to see how it shakes out is like, okay, none of us have been in the office in, gosh, 8 months now, right? Or 6 months. When this kind of opens back up, what will kind of continue over from this time with respect to like remote work and distance engagement with your customers and prospects, and what will kind of go back to normal? So I think that's something that we don't know yet, but I think a lot of our customers are exploring how they will work and how they will sell into the future. I think those are like the two real big things that we're seeing right now.
That makes sense. I mean, I think pre-COVID, especially most companies I'll say, stuck in their ways of how they do it, right? How they sell, it's either over the phone, it's in person, it's knocking on doors, it's traveling to clients or whatever that looks like, doing face-to-face. Like, that's what we always do. Here's how we do it. We pick up the phone. We don't do chat. We don't do this. We don't do that. And so then this is kind of like, okay, well, now you're stuck at home. How are you going to replicate that, right? You can't go to a conference anymore and have a booth. So how are you going to find potential clients? What are you going to do? And obviously the ones who want to be successful have evolved and tried to find something. But the punchline, like you said, is that it's about meeting the potential clients where they are and how they want to communicate and what's best for them. I mean, even when things kind of thaw out from this pandemic and people can go back to it, will people want to, or will people realize the time savings, which is when I talk to people all the time, they're like, I don't commute an hour each way. I don't go to an airport and then fly for a meeting and waste that whole day. I get so much more done and I have, you know, so much more time for other things. It's like, I don't want to go back to that. I miss people, but I don't want to get back to that.
Yeah. And I think that something else that COVID has accelerated is the concept, and you in this show is a perfect example of like a digital resume. And so you have this podcast, and this podcast is your best expression of who you are and what your business is all about. If people want to hire you, they probably are going to go check out this podcast and they will learn much, much more of listening to 5 or 10 episodes of your podcast than they would of having you on an interview or having you do a test project or whatever, whether you're a developer or a designer or a salesperson or whatever, you having that like digital presence for people to really see exactly what you're about because you're producing this content over and over. I think that because a lot of us have had to only rely on that perspective of information now, that we've gotten really okay with it. I don't need to go interview a bunch of people. I just looked at their LinkedIn thing, see the maybe open source projects that a developer has contributed to, listen to their podcast. And so I think that the acceptability or the acceptance of a lot of this content as a real professional asset for people has gone up. And I think that will stay. I probably am biased because that means like things like podcasting, but I don't think that's wrong.
And I agree. I mean, I think that's where there's a lot of debate and or discussion, especially online in various circles of sales leadership, which is, should your salespeople have individual profiles and personas online, right? Like, should your salespeople have a LinkedIn profile and be on there and making posts or Facebook or Instagram or whatever's relative to your company? And historically, the answer to that has always been no. The company wants to control the content. Salespeople come and go. You don't want to have them build a personal brand. Like, they should be selling, not posting stuff online. And then it was shifting. And then COVID happened and everyone's kind of on their own. And it's like, okay, I can't do the face-to-face, right? Yep. I wouldn't say that's lazy, but I've been a telephone salesperson for so long. Like, going to see someone face-to-face to close the deal to me is like easy. That's like a layup. And so you have this now where people can't do that, right? And so they're, yeah, like, okay, I got to use the phone. I got to use Zoom. What else do I have? Okay, like you said, this digital resume, and it makes people step it up a little bit. And I think that is valid. I think everyone should have some kind of presence because no matter what happens, even if it's not a lot, every customer, I guarantee, especially if you're selling at a higher level, every potential customer, the first thing before they get on your demo or get on your phone call is going to Google you or look you up as a salesperson and be like, okay, do I like this person? Do I want to deal with this person? Do I get a good vibe? Do I like this company? And then, yep, go from there.
And hiring too. Like, when we hire somebody, we do not ever ask for their resume. Like, I've not seen a resume. We're a team of 10 people. I've not seen a resume yet. We have them fill out an application. We do like a small test project, no matter kind of what they're coming in to do. And then, yeah, I check out their stuff because no matter who they are, I mean, maybe we're a little different because we're like an online media organization, but people need to be doing things because from developers to customer support to marketing to sales, they have to engage with our customers. And I think maybe we're at kind of the edge of that and other big lumbering companies will be kind of catching up to that. But I think that, yeah, and if I think about like my previous sales life, yeah, I definitely would have some kind of online presence now to engage with my customers when I can't see them in person.
If there's one thing I know, it's that sales is full of failure. Even if you're a Hall of Fame level sales professional, you can make a great income despite losing more than you're winning. If there's one aspect of sales that most people fear and what keeps a lot of people even wanting to get into sales, it's getting hit with objections. That is why I wrote my latest book, The Sales Consultant Guide to Overcoming Objections, Yours and Theirs. This is the first in my new series of short books, guides filled with what you need for helping you improve your selling effectiveness. No fluff, no long-winded stories, no filler to make it seem more valuable, just actual foundation-building strategies to help you become aware of the true nature of why your prospects bring up objections, the different type of objections, and then specific ways to overcome them that are universal to most any sales process, product, service, or style. Go to Amazon.com today and get your copy of A Sales Consultant's Guide to Overcoming Objections. Or if you'd rather, as a gift to the listeners of this podcast, email me at jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com and I'll send you a complimentary full version of it as my thank you for listening and supporting this show. And then also have that digital brochure, right? Which is, even if you're not using it as a proactive business development, but to have that brochure because you know they're going to look at you, right? You know, yep. They're going to Google you and go, okay, is this somebody I want to deal with? So that's fascinating about not asking for resumes. And I'm laughing because, like, literally I'm in the process of recruiting people for my team and then also for clients and obviously default to the resume. It's so funny because I never really look at them. I glance through them and I'm like, it's either fabrications of things or it just sounds nice. It's, you know, marketing material. Yeah. Or it doesn't matter because you just never know until you talk to someone what somebody's really capable of, right? Versus what's on there that you might think, oh, they don't have enough or they have too much. But tell me about how that's working with finding salespeople in particular. Because developers, that's one thing. Show me some code, do the test project. Let me see if you really got it. And then yep. What about for the sales side or customer service or client success?
Yeah.
How do you handle that?
So in both, one of the first things we ask for in our application is a video of them talking to me and like a video sales letter of themselves and why they're a good fit for this role. I mean, not for developers, but we ask them to kind of express that in like a code sample project. So it's the same idea as like, okay, you're going to come in to be a salesperson or a customer service person or a marketing person or an ops person. Tell me why you're a good fit for this role. So it's basically a video version of their resume. But if they can't express why they're a good fit for this role in like a 2-minute video, then there's a bunch of other things that they're not going to be a good fit for. And maybe that's unique to us because like we're a remote company. So being able to express yourself really clearly and concisely in a lot of different formats is important. And then the next thing that we do as a follow-up is we have kind of an email exchange as the first round interview almost. So we ask for the video, folks that kind of pass that test in the application phase, go on to having like a 2 or 3 return email with me just to get a sense of like how they communicate over email, how they write their style, how concise it is and all these kind of things. And from there, like we know quite a bit about people and then move on to like a Zoom call as a final step for a lot of folks. Because, I mean, we've learned quite a bit about them in a pretty asynchronous manner. So hiring is a really quick process, like a couple of weeks for us typically.
I love so much about that, especially because one of the things I've always done in a hiring position or with companies is to have the hiring process, the recruiting process, follow and mimic as closely as possible as to what the salesperson's going to be doing in their role. So like what you're talking about, you have remote salespeople. So what I know to be true about your company and your team and what you're doing is obviously there's going to be video conference calls. They're going to be selling that way. There's also emails that they're going to be sending. And so in those two actions, plus the Zoom call, you're testing the things that they're going to do. And I've done that many times with, I know I'm hiring for a call center. It's all phone. I don't care about video, right? Like video is not important and video is overwhelming. I want somebody who's just good over the phone, right? Because that's yep. what I'm hiring them for. There's literally no video, but there's going to be emails. There's going to be follow-ups. And so it's phone interviews first, to see if they're good on the phone even before coming into an office. And then it's emails back and forth, email tests, email questions, and just seeing if they can communicate. Because if they can't reply back for that, for something they really say they want, which is a job, what's going to happen with their pipeline of leads that they need yep. to work on and close? And what are they going to send to people?
Yeah. The other thing that we've just on the hiring point, because I think it's really interesting, the other thing we've done is picked this up from David Cancel of Drift. Is we create a 30, 60, and 90 day plan for what this person will achieve before we write the job posting. So we create this like at 30 days, they'll be doing this, at 60 days and 90 days, they'll be doing this. Then we then write the job posting from that. And then as somebody comes on board, we kind of have a 30 and 60 and 90 day check-in with them to say, hey, this is what the 30 and 60 and 90 day plan said. This is how you were hired. We're on track or we're not. And it's been great because it takes all of the ambiguity out of like, what does good mean? All these kind of things is like we have established that well before we even started really looking. I mean, so far it's worked out really well. Maybe like the best thing we've done for like onboarding and engagement with folks so far.
And what happens in a lot of, at least I'm going to speak from the sales side, sales and or marketing, which is hire somebody, give them some training. Hopefully they'll do well, close lots of deals. That's the goal. Just close it.
And that's super vague, right?
You're super vague and or super specific, but no wiggle room, which is you should be doing a sale a day or two sales a day or three sales a month. And you're either hitting that or you're not. And when should you be hitting that number? I don't know, as soon as possible, because we need three sales this month. So hopefully soon. And then what you're saying is, and this is what people really need, and people, especially who want to win, really need, is the rules of the game and the playbook, right? Like you sit down to play a board game, you sit down to play Monopoly, there's rules, and the people who really want to win know the rules and know how to maximize that and know what winning looks like. Here's what winning will look like at every stage. And the more you can do that and be specific. A lot of sales leaders I see and business owners, they don't want to feel restrictive or controlling, or they feel like they let people do what they do best. And everyone needs that framework.
Yeah. And I think if people don't want that, that's a super bad sign, right? Like if we are bringing somebody on and say, okay, we have a 30, 60, 90 day plan for you, and they push back, ooh, that's a red flag for me. It's not a total deal breaker, depending on the kind of role, but especially for something like sales or marketing, it's a deal breaker.
And I think that's where, just like if you're selling to somebody and there's a, who's a good fit as a customer and who's not a good fit, who a problem you can solve and a problem you can't solve, hiring I see is the same thing. It's like a sales role or in a sales pipeline, which is there's people who are a good fit or not. When you go outside of those boundaries that you've set, if you've set them and make exceptions, it will usually be painful and not work long term.
Yeah.
But what you're saying is being able to say no and not come from a place of being desperate and say, if you don't like the 30, 60, 90, you're not going to like being here. I'm not going to like you being here. And let's just save ourselves some time. Like, this is not a good fit.
Totally. Yep.
So let's also talk about the topic that comes up a lot, which I don't know. I feel like sometimes I should stop talking about it, but it's so present. And I think the more we address it, the better, which is the, I don't like the word silos, but the division between departments like sales and marketing, right? Where it's literally feels like sales versus marketing all the time. What have you seen as solutions for that in your time with Castos and or your time in the past or what you're seeing with client companies?
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. Those are three very different things. We try to be a very kind of flat organization at Castos to where marketing talks to sales, talks to product all of the time, and they all have a lot to do with each other. Thinking about our customers now who are maybe a little more like traditional siloed organizations, I think that more and more people are seeing the importance of that not being siloed with respect to like the velocity of information, right? Because, and going back to like that daily update maybe of like a product person coming in and talking to the sales team, is like the companies that are able to adapt to working remotely and COVID and new competitors in the market are the ones that are able to share and disseminate information the most freely and the quickest across the whole organization. And I think that logically, if you're doing that, it means that there are very few or very low silos between really organizations or parts of the organization that should be doing basically the same. Now, having the same kinds of goals, sales and marketing should be just to get more customers. They go about it very different ways, but they should be very complementary, I think. And I think like we have a bias, right? Because the companies that we're engaging with by default are really progressive in how they communicate, right? They're thinking about doing an internal company podcast for their kind of revenue teams. By default, they understand the importance of like sharing this information. So I think we're seeing some of the quote best companies or most progressive companies in this respect. But I think that like if you look at the companies in your space that are struggling, I think you would almost always see that they're doing a bad job of this. And so maybe that's like the anti-pattern you want to avoid. And it's just accepting ego, like putting your ego aside and saying, we're going to share this information with another part of the organization because it's going to help them, which in turn kind of makes our job easier because like they're going to close more of these qualified leads. And my job is to give them qualified leads. So I need to know more about what that looks like. Like all of that stuff is really logical, I think. But I think part of it, Jason, is like the incentives from the leadership level have to support that. Because I think a lot of times you get into the situation of like, okay, marketing needs to bring in X number of qualified leads a month, and then sales has to go close those. But a lot of times, like, what those leads look like are very different, right? Like, marketing is bringing in a bunch of what they think are qualified leads, and sales gets them, says, oh, this is a disaster. Like, these are not the kinds of people I want. And so they have to be able to talk back and forth, but then leadership has to be able to support what that looks like for both parts of the organization. And I think that's maybe where it kind of falls down.
It's fascinating hearing you talk about it. And the thing that pops in my mind, and I'm not going to tell the whole parable story because I know I'm going to butcher it, so I'm not going to, but I've heard that parable story about, I think it's like three blind men come up to an elephant and they each touch a different part of the elephant, right? One is touching the leg and thinks it's a tree, and another one touches the ear and thinks, I think it's a leaf, whatever it is, right? It's three different parts. And they all have this different perception of what it is when it turns out it's an elephant. And that just jumped into my mind instantly when you're talking about that. What does marketing think a good lead is? What does sales think a good lead is? Everyone is like touching the lead and thinking different things, and they have this different story. And that alignment at the top is the key that I've always found. And I love the fact that you said it's the ego, right? It's putting that ego aside, because inevitably what happens is marketing and or marketing leadership wants to preserve and protect their ego or their stake in the ground or their silo or whatever that is. And so they're going to justify and stand up for their side. And then sales is going to do the same thing. And that just leads to so many issues. And I appreciate the fact that you struggle with knowing what they're not doing right from the customers that you're dealing with. I talked to somebody a couple of days ago and I asked him the same question, and he struggled. And the thing is, like, you're right. The progressive companies are the ones that are dealing with you. You don't know what the non-progressive companies are doing other than not working with you. So it's tough to have an idea of what the ones who aren't, other than the ones who just tell you no, but probably not even engaging with them in the first place.
Yep, absolutely.
So let's switch a little bit. When you hear the word authenticity, what does that mean to you?
I think it's kind of like being true to the ethos of your organization and what you represent. So if I think about it, like, from a sales perspective, it's like honestly believing that the product or the service that you're selling is going to make your customer that much better off if they buy it and use your product or service. Thinking back to my days in sales, the times I did the best was when I had really strong conviction that, like, if our customers bought our thing, their lives are going to be better. And that makes sales so easy if you honestly believe that. And if you do have, like, the best product for a certain type of customer. And I was able to talk really authentically about my product and really passionately to a deeply technical audience. And that just made all the difference in the world in, like, how they received that, I think.
Makes sense. And I definitely appreciate that. And then what about the other part of my formula, which is the persuasion piece? What do you think when you hear persuasion, and or where have you seen that come in your success in sales, keeping in mind everything is sales?
Yeah, I hate to say it goes back to a bit of the same thing, but, like, I think that people can really tell when somebody doesn't believe in the product that they're selling. And not all of us have the luxury to have a product that they're really proud to stand behind. But I think when you do that, things like persuasion and using tone and words and an approach to selling that is really obvious that, like, you would use this if you were in their shoes to a customer just makes the whole selling process, which is persuasion, really easy. And so I think that, like, if salespeople aren't 100% behind their product, they need to find a way to be. And I say that, like, the words have to sound good coming out of your mouth, right? Like, you have to find a way to rep your product that sounds good coming from you and your background and where you're coming from and the type of people that you're talking to, or go find another job. Because I think it's really obvious if you are not, like, 100% behind what you're trying to sell, and, like, your prospects and your leads and your customers can see that too.
I couldn't agree more. Anybody that knows me say the same thing all the time. Just go find a different job or stop selling. Because, yeah, people can sense that, right? If you're not totally on board, you're going to feel like a hypocrite inside at some level, and it's just not going to work. You're just not going to be highly effective. You might be somewhat effective. You might close some sales, but not at a professional rate. In your experience, both, again, from your time selling to now having teams and seeing what works, what would you say is, like, maybe the top mindset trait of successful salespeople?
Yeah. So I think I'm a little biased because I've only ever sold really technical things, but I have an engineering degree, an engineering background. And I think it's being able to be very technical and meet our customers and leads on the level that they want to talk at. Yeah, I think some of the most dangerous, in a good way, salespeople are engineers and really technical people, because, sorry, salespeople, that's a hard thing to teach a salesperson, is how to be technical. And like, the prospects can see that they don't really get all the minutiae of what you're talking about. But to teach an engineer or a technical person how to do sales is really, really dangerous. Like, that, though, they're almost always the best performers in my previous experience. And now too, is like, I have to be able to explain everything about a podcast and about APIs and software and all this kind of stuff to our customers. And if I wasn't, I know that those conversations would fall flat. And before, it was, you know, even worse, I was talking to doctors all day and they need to know exactly what's going to happen. And if I couldn't tell them exactly what's going to happen, I lose all credibility instantly. So again, that's kind of colored by my background a little bit, but I think it translates to a lot of fields. It's like being an expert in your subject matter and then selling that with that expertise.
Beyond the technical knowledge, right? So if we extract just the having all the info in your head, is there any other reasons why you think that engineer who's stepping into a sales role or is talking to prospective customers moving forward, is there anything else about them that helps them get that edge or be more successful?
Yeah, I mean, a couple things that come to mind. One is like the almost instant credibility of like, hey, I'm an engineer. Like, oh, that's great. They must know something. As opposed to like, I'm a salesperson. Like, right. I think people that are, quote, just salespeople have to gain that kind of technical respect from customers. But I think also that somebody that, no matter your background, like has really nailed the technical stuff, is able to not think about it as much and kind of step back and see the bigger picture a little bit, to say like, okay, this is all the technical stuff and I can talk about it, but I really want to talk about like the customer journey and what you're going to get emotionally out of my product or service. And then you can like dive into the weeds to talk about it. But I think if you're really comfortable with that detail, that you're able to take a step back and think about like how your customer is going to interact and benefit from this thing you're talking about. And I think that that is really powerful in talking to customers and leads.
I totally agree. And I'm glad that you put it that way. What I have found is the technical salespeople, someone who's coming from a techno background, even if they're just on the engineering side and not in sales, but they're brought in for the conversations to help assist the salespeople, right? They're not a full-fledged sales engineer, if you will. Their goal is to help customers and create a great experience for a customer and solve problems, because they know what it can do. And they approach the conversation different versus a, I'm going to persuade you because I want to sell you. Like, I'm going to persuade you because I know that I can help you, versus somebody who might be more on the pure sales side, which is, my job is to tell stories and get people to like me and build rapport and then convince them and overcome objections and push people forward or move people forward. And it's two different approaches. I mean, I've always found the analytical engineer that can do it effectively will just sneak up on prospects all the time. And next thing they'll know, they've signed up because it's a good fit. The walls aren't there in the same way. And yeah, the response isn't the same.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the perfect situation or the perfect like approach to every situation, because I, for myself, I know that I'm not as aggressive as a lot of other salespeople. And so like, I probably lose deals because of that, but hopefully kind of get my share from the technical aspect.
Well, and that was going to be my next question, is for those people listening, or they're working with, or they have an organization with sales engineers or engineers that do some sales or on the technical side. What is the biggest thing that gets in their way of success? One of the things you just said is usually not being as aggressive, air quotes. We could debate if that's a good thing or not.
Yeah.
But what else? Anything else that comes to mind?
I think that, and again, this is just my experience, but learning how to sell is a skill, right? And as an engineer or a technical person, you don't have that. And so like, they have to get onboarded into a sales process and understanding what an enterprise sales process is. And it's painful and it takes forever, but it's just a process. It's not a personal thing against you and your product. But also, yeah, learning things about persuasion, learning about how to like propose value in a way that really makes sense and really kind of works with a customer on an emotional level, I think is something that engineers don't get instantly, because they think about like a feature instead of thinking about, yeah, a benefit, right? Like, this widget is this size and it's this fast and it does this thing. But like, really what your customer cares about is like getting home so they can see their kids and making their number and all this kind of stuff. So like, I think that that's the hard thing, is like, engineers think about what a thing does, not what the outcome is for the customer, what the benefit is.
And or in my experience as well is also what is the user experience? Because the engineer is thinking about the engineer's user experience and how they use it versus how the customer is going to use it. I'm just going to say it as a normal person, because I've worked at some companies where I'm using the output of what the engineers are making, and I'm just a dude with a marine biology degree and I am not an engineer, and they're making stuff. It's like, no, that's not how we want to use it. Like, there's a disconnect. So I think that's interesting. One thing I'm really curious about, and I think is valuable to share, what was it like going from enterprise medical focused sales, right, at a high level, like you're doing it, you're successful, and you shift into a online software mass market type of sales process? What was the biggest thing you found that you were surprised by? What was the biggest shift you had to make? What was a challenge in that and or success?
Yeah, so I think that the biggest challenge has been working with developers and building a software product. Like, it's just totally different. I have no experience in it before this. And so it's just been a learning process along the way. But I think that the benefit I have is having all of this kind of interpersonal experience in sales and like face-to-face sales to understand our customers and what they need and want, and be able to tell that user story back to our technical team to say like, hey, they need a thing that does this because of that. And I think that is the good thing that I brought over to Castos. I also think, and this is for folks that are like entrepreneurs or maybe younger folks that want to go out and just kind of start their own thing, is working in a Fortune 100 company is a really good thing in a lot of ways, because you see how things should be done in some respects. And then you're able to take that and kind of like take the best parts of that to your smaller organization. So I think that like folks who have never worked for a big company and see how the machine works really miss some of the benefits of process and standardization and reporting and hierarchy and things like that, that really every organization needs at some point. You know, if it's just you, maybe you don't, but maybe you just kind of internalize all that. But when you get past a couple of people, you need all of that stuff. And if you've seen how it works in a big successful organization, just carrying that over and maybe picking the best parts of it, leaving off some of the stuff that you don't really need is okay. But like, I think seeing that in kind of a previous life has been helpful for me.
Makes total sense. And I think the other option to that is if you haven't gone through that and you're starting something new or you're at a small organization, is it's just going to be trial and error. And it's going to be a bit of just learning in a more painful way than you could have if you brought that with you. So I love what you said. And it's interesting to think that you were doing enterprise medical device. Now you have mass market podcast hosting service, and still it's a technical solution for another person. Doesn't matter how much that translates, which is what I love. I mean, that's why I say everything in life is sales. And what you're doing is you have a technical ability to solve somebody's issue or provide them a solution that has some technical engineered aspect to it. Doesn't matter what you, I could totally see you starting some other company that provides a technical engineering solution to somebody. And it doesn't matter. You go from medical to podcasting to, I don't know, agriculture. And you literally, it's the same thing. You would just take it with you. I mean, you just take that one part instead of being married to, okay, I'm only doing medical or I'm only doing this. So
yeah, I think a lot of people find that like that's their lane, right? And they kind of stay. And then it might have several different flavors, but generally it's about the same thing.
Yeah. And the guardrails of that lane and how tight they are. Some people stick specifically with an industry or specifically with a product. Some people realize, okay, what's the common theme? It's this. And then how do I apply that or where can I go with that? Took me a long time to figure out any common theme with my windy path and what might make sense. Definitely not as clear as the one you're on. Growing up, what did you want to be?
I wanted to be in the Air Force.
Yeah?
Yeah. Be a Maverick from Top Gun.
I was guessing.
It was Navy, I know, but yeah.
And what happened?
I think I got smart before I applied to college and just said, that's not what I want to do.
You're like, yeah, that's not going to work for me.
That's cool for a movie.
Yeah. And then for you, what's your personal definition of success?
Yeah, I hate to say that I'm living it, but like being able to provide for my family and live the life that I want is really fulfilling. I have lunch with my kids every day and I pick them up from school and like I'm here and I'm able to spend this time with them and I have a successful business and there's not much else I really want. Even now with the world in the toilet, like it's not that bad. Pretty happy. Yeah.
That's great. Last question, the journey or the destination?
It has to be the journey because there's not a destination.
Got it. I love it. All right. So, Craig, for people who are listening and are watching, castos.com, CASTOS.com. And then I have it on the screen, but for people, there's also /internal-company-podcast, which is that private internal one we're talking about. And then you also have /audience. Who should go there? Who's the best people? Like, if somebody's listening and they're like, I don't know if this is for me, who's the best person to go find what you're doing?
Yeah. So I think that everybody can go to castos.com. Castos.com/audience is our podcast. We obviously podcast about podcasting, talk a lot about private podcast, internal company, membership sites, online businesses. And then for folks out there that are, yeah, C-suite leadership sales folks, want to check out about what an internal company podcast is and how you might use it. We have a lot of information there. Yeah, all these different kind of flavors of what an internal company podcast might look like and why you might need one.
Awesome. I love it. And Craig, thanks for joining me on the show and sharing all this in this fun journey that you've had in your path and what you're doing now. So thank you for being here.
My pleasure. It's a lot of fun. Thanks, Jason.
Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.